Again, we will not be able to do every person. We'll try to be relatively selective. The first pasuk, again, there's not a, the Gemara does not say a lot on it. It's a theme that is mentioned many times, and that itself deserves a hesper that I actually don't have, and that is there are many, many ideas in Mishlei that are repeated, that are said over because they're very important mussar. Perhaps that's a remiss, though. Just thinking out loud, it might be a remiss to Rabbi Saul Salanter's teaching that when he developed this movement of mussar, and obviously he was not machadesh, the concept of mussar, but it was an emphasis, a movement he wanted to, in fact, it was not even necessarily for the yeshivas, although he wanted it in the yeshivas too, it was actually for balabatim, people who were Isaac and Parnassa and the like. So Yisrael Shita, he created what's called the base mussar, maybe you've heard of it because Rav Olba tried to bring it back, that's a place where a special bias, that's miyuchad, not for learning, it's not a base medrash, it's only miyuchad on tikkun hamidos and cheshbon nefesh and sifri mussar. So you're not even going to find, actually I was never in the actual base mussar, but theoretically you wouldn't find the Gemara in the base mussar. I'm not sure if they went that far, but that would be it. So at the time, there was a hisnagdus to the base mussar. They said, what are you creating separate institutions? We have base kinesis, base medrash. What do you mean base mussar? And they said, as kind of a joke, it says in Hallel, Beis Arayin, Baruch Hu Hashem, Beis Halevi, Baruch Hu Hashem, Yirei Hashem, Baruch Hu Hashem. So you'll notice, there's a Beis Arayin, and there's a, you know, Beis Halevi, but Yirei Hashem don't have a bias. You don't have a special bias for Yirei Hashem, a Beis Mussar. Okay. But be it as it may, Rabbi Yisrael said there were two different ways that a person learns Mussar. One was kind of the Musar of Ian, in which you're Ma'ayan. And the Ian and Musar is actually several different things of Ian. There's an Ian in Cheshbon HaNefesh. And there's an Ian in the Halachais of Bein Adam L'Chaveira. That's also Ian, Cheshin Mishpat. Ian in Cheshin Mishpat was Bein Adam L'Chaveira. Ian in the philosophy of life and in knowing yourself. So it's both an Ian in terms of the Hashgafas HaTorah and an Ian in looking into yourself. Which, by the way, the Chazon Ish was not necessarily a great fan of. The Chazon Ish said, sometimes if you look into yourself too deeply, you get a little obsessive and it can make you depressed. So the Chazon Ish actually had a little bit of a problem, even on that type of intense Cheshbon HaNefesh. But that's one derech. But the other was what he called Musar B'Hispailus. Hispailus, or in Hebrew you pronounce it Hispalut, or Hitpalut, is emotional arousal. To be mispael, right? It's to be emotionally excited over something. And that referred to taking one Maimar Chazal, like a mantra. It's working. I mean, the philosophy is exactly the same as a mantra, and saying it over and over and over and over again. Because even if your mind, you know, knows what it says the first time, it takes a while for the heart and the emotions to get invested. And this was called Musar B'Hispailus, that you get by repeating something over and over and over and over again. And this was something that many, many Gedolim did. Chabad Chaim in particular, people who had the sechus to be in the inn, the room in the inn next to him, would often say that they would hear him saying a Maimer Chazal over and over and over again. So I'm just trying to think, again, I mean, there has to be a deeper reason, but part of why, indeed, there may be such a repetition in Mishlei of certain ideas is that the remez, that for Tikkun Hamidos, it's sometimes not simply a new idea that comes into your head, because for that I could say it once, but you have to say it over and over and over again, and then it makes a ratio that they say. In fact, actually, it's interesting that... Is it in this parak? Just as an aside, I'm not going to even talk about this pasuk today, but if you look at the very end of this very parak that we're in, pasuk chaf gimel, I'm just mentioning it because of the maisa, and not even because of the pasuk itself. The pasuk says, parak yud gimel, pasuk chaf gimel, Rav Eichel near Rashim, V'yesh nispeh b'lo mishpat. Now, literally, that pasuk is a hard one to translate, actually, but it says, much food is produced by the plowing of poor people. Meaning, poor people are doing a lot of labor, it produces a lot of food for the rest of the world, and they get nothing out of it. And by the same token, yesh nispeh b'lo mishpat. Sometimes a person is gathered, a person dies, lo mishpat, without justice, meaning he doesn't deserve to die, but he might be a kapara, just like the poor person sacrifices his labor and his work to benefit somebody else. Sometimes a person dies, not because of anything he deserved, but so lo mishpat doesn't really mean without justice, but the way Chazal understand it, without him personally deserving to die, because his death is a service or a kapara for others. And indeed, as has been pointed out in our recent tragedy in Har Nof, where such kedoshim were slaughtered when in the middle of davening with talis and tefillin, and these were people who were tzaddikim and talmidei chachamim and very, very righteous people, and ben adam lechavero as well as ben adam lemakom. Part of the understanding is that we are in a door that has many, many chesronos, and Hashem and his rachamim took korbanos who are shoko connected many more people, meaning the concept might be, and we don't know the divine calculations obviously, that people are weighed against each other sometimes. So it might be that one person might be shoko against 10 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, 1,000,000 people, you know, we don't even know. But that's the meaning of the pasuk, that just as the poor person's efforts are not for the poor person, they're for the guy who gets the food, so too, sometimes the death of the righteous is not for their sin, but they're doing it as a kapara. This is a pasuk. Yesh nispe b'loy mishpat. So it's just recorded that Rabbi Saul Salanter, a very dear friend who was machzik him economically and psychologically. Again, Rabbi Saul Salanter, you have to understand, Rabbi Saul Salanter had a very, very difficult life in many, many ways, because most of his middle years and his older years, he spent wandering around from place to place in France and Germany, where there were very few religious Jews, to try to be makar of them back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So his home was around Vilna, right? Talmidei Chachamim, Gedolim, Tzaddikim, and he would come to Vilna like 2 months a year. That was literally his power source to get recharged. He needed the chizuk too. But most of the time he was in places that didn't even have a minyan, very, very often. He was mamish in the middle of nowhere. He was the first, like it was literally a one man, and it was very unusual. Now we have, you know, Or Sameach, we have Campus Kira, we have all sorts of programs. He was the first one. He went to universities and tried to be Maccabi. In fact, he had a whole plan. He wanted to translate the Gemara into German, all sorts of things. He met with Rav Hirsch about the different inyanim. They had very different shitas in life, but they both were gedolim of great, great amuna, and they talked, you know, they spoke to each other. But at one point, so he needed chizik. Rabbi Saul Salanter himself needed a lot of chizik because he was a very, very lonely mission in terms of what he was doing. So this was a chaver, I think it was a balabais. He wasn't even a great gadol b'tor, but he was a chaver who was mechazikin in many, many ways. And he died suddenly in Paris. So it's recorded that the only Rabbi Saul Salanter spoke for around 25 minutes. And all he said was this pasuk, Yesh nispe below mishpat, for 25 minutes. And he was crying, and really everybody in the room was aroused to great, great b'chi. So he applied the teaching of Musar B'his Pilus, Gekupa, in this pasuk of Yesh nispe below mishpat. This is just recorded. There was an unbelievable hesped that was given. All he said was the pasuk over and over again. Okay. So that's a little bit of a mahalach on the meaning of repetition. I mean, obviously it's not a full teretz, because obviously, I'll tell you why it can't be a full teretz, because Musar B'his Pilus B'davka makes the point of saying it in exactly the same words. Now, if the pshat is the same idea is expressed in different words, I think you have more of a kasha, because if in terms of the intellectual content it's giving you the same idea, so it's redundant. And in terms of the emotional impact, the repetition has to be b'dayuk. Now, l'maisa, in Mishlei, you actually have repetitions, occasional repetitions, of the exact same words, which is a belly. You don't see it anywhere else in Nach, where an identical pasuk is mentioned twice. But most of the time, it's not that you have identical pasuk, but you have a pasuk in different words that seems to be saying the same thing. So it's still a mitzvah liyashiv. Again, I, you know, even the Perish Agra, does not, maybe because it's not directly from the Gra, does not give us a teretz for every one of these problems. And no, listen, Makom hinichel lachem lehisgader. What do Chazal say? That no matter how great were the Kadmainim who before us, there's always a makom left over for the new dairis to kind of see something new. So maybe this is your job. You can look at these psukim and perhaps come up with more ideas. So I'm just confessing that I don't have a yeshua for everything. So, for example, Pasuk Aleph makes a point that has been made many, many times, and that is Ben Chacham Musar Av, a wise son. Now, remember, Chacham, right? Mishlei is called by Chazal Sefer HaChochma. Okay, if you have, I doubt you'll remember this, but if you do, I'll give you extra credit on the exam. And that is, the Chazan on Yomim Naran, for Perlman, begins, right after the Piyutim begin right after the Laman Shemo B'Yavah, right before Magen Avram, then we begin to insert the Piyutim. So before the Piyutim were actually said, the Chazan has a psicha, which is only for the Chazan to say. And the Piyut for the first day of Rosh Hashanah says, Tamachti Yisaidosai B'Sefer HaChachma. I put my stake in the Book of Wisdom that says, Maner Rach, a soft answer, Yashiv Chema, turns away anger. It's a poem, it rhymes, right? Tamachti Yisaidosai B'Sefer HaChachma, Maner Rach, Yashiv Chema. The whole thing is based on a rhyme. So basically, Sefer HaChachma is Mishlei, Man Erach, Yashuv Chem is a pasuk in Mishlei. Right? So I'm just giving you a little proof that Mishlei is called Sefer HaChachma. Now, the reason why it's called Sefer HaChachma is because the first pasuk in Mishlei, after the introduction, Mishlei Shlomo, says, Reishis Chachma. We say this every day after Modani. Reishis Chachma. The beginning of Chachma is Yiras Hashem. So Chachma does not mean IQ. Chacham does not even mean how much Torah you know, although it's all connected. But Chachma means having a foundation in Yiras Hashem. Chachma is knowing what is right and what is wrong. So a Ben Chacham is a son who knows the right way of life and the wrong way of life. So if a person is Zocha to a Ben, that is a Chacham, Musar Av, that comes from the Musar, the guidance, the discipline that the father gives. Meaning if a child is raised hefker, then unfortunately he will often remain hefker. Now, this is actually repeated at the end of the perek with a pasuk that is even more famous. Look at pasuk chafdalad at the end of it. It's right after the pasuk we just read about Rav Ochel near Rashim. And this is a famous pasuk that the Puritans like this verse quite a lot. Chosech shifto sonei beno, which in the famous English translation, spare the rod and hate the child, which basically says, gotta hit your child, and that shows that you love him. But again, the Gra over there says that obviously this does, well, in fact, that the Gemara, first of all, the Gemara in Makkos, if you remember, the Gemara in Makkos, the Mishnah in Makkos says, when you kill somebody b'shogeg, so you go to an ir miklat, okay? But it mentions that if you're hitting someone because it's a mitzvah to hit them, then even if the person dies, you don't go to an ir miklat because you're osek in a mitzvah. And the examples that the Mishnah gives is av hamake espenai. Gives three examples. An av that is make espenai, and a rav, a teacher that is of Torah, that is right as Talmidai, u'shaliach beistin. Now, the shaliach beistin is really the easiest to understand. This is a situation where before a person gets malchus, he is given a medical examination. And the rofe certifies that he could take 39 malchus. If not, you have to go lower, and it has to be divisible by 3. Malchus has to be divisible by 3 because one-third he gets in the front and two-thirds on each shoulder. So in Mela, right, so that's why, for example, if a person could only take 17 malchus, you would have to go down to 15. By the way, the truth of the matter is, it's very interesting, just nothing to do with this, but there's an interesting halacha to be aware of. You know, these shilas, what do you do? Like, a person eats an ant, right? So the Gemara says there are five lavin for these different things. Now, nobody could take 39 times 5. That's really not humanly possible, basically. So what do you do when you have five malchus? So it really depends like this. Well, let me take two malchus first. If the person can only take 39 or less, and it's not shayach to kind of get into the second one, so he gets whatever he can take, and then he has to wait till he gets better, then we give it again. But if he could take any amount that's divisible by 3 that goes into the second group, meaning if he could take 42, he's in a lot better shape than if he could only take 39. Because if he takes 39, he gets 39, we'll wait a month, then give him another 39. If he can take 42, we give him 42, and he's exempt. Okay, so it actually helps to be able, when you have multiple malchus, it actually, of course, if it's more than 2, you know, it's going to, anyway, you're probably going to have to wait.
How come he gets, 42 is the maximum he could take?
No, it's the minimum. In other words, I meant he has two prohibitions for which he's chayef to get
39 each.
So as long as you could enter even as little as 3 into the second group, we do it right away, and he doesn't have to make it up later.
So we have 39 plus 3.
39 plus 3 is 42. 42. That's
and
correct.
If you have 3 in a row, 3 39s in a row, it would be 39 plus 6.
42. Well, no. You can't. That's the thing. You can't get into the third one until you finish the second one. So he would have to have 78, and if he could take 81, then he would get up for the third one. So you know, at some point, it's not going to be possible. In other words, you don't give him credit. You don't give him credit for the next one until you have finished the other ones. But that's why I'm saying. But it is very clear, l'chayr from the sugya, that it's much better to be able to take 4. If you have 2 malchus, you're much better off at 42 than you are at 39. Because at 39, you're going to have to get another 39. At 42, you're going to be.
What's the reason why they made it?
Why they what?
What's the reason why they made it like this?
No, because the basic halacha is a person is supposed to get all his malchus at once. But if you're not able to give him a minimal malchus, so you have to wait. So, Mamela, the minimal malchus that you can give a person is 3. If a person cannot take 3 malchus, he doesn't get anything.
Why have rachmonos on the strong person and no rachmonos on the weak person?
Well, it's a good kasha, but it's based on the principle that if you're able to fulfill all of your punishments at one time, that is the way you do it. Okay. But be this way, I want to go back to this problem, and that is this. So the shliach based, and we can understand why he's not chayiv golus, because essentially the doctor said this guy could take, let's say, 39. Shliach based hits him 39, the guy drops dead. So the shliach based is not at fault. Einachinami, the Mishnah says, if he accidentally hit more than the number, he will be chayiv. But if he hits within the number, he's potter. Right? That's fine. But the Av HaMakeh Espanai is a big problem, right? So first of all, the Gemara asks, what if the son didn't do anything wrong? He says, well, no. Even if the son is perfectly fine, it's good to hit him to be sure that he stays in line, etc. Now, it's clear, though, even the Rishayim and the Sugya say, we are, God forbid, we are not talking about, you know, a father takes a lead pipe, you know, and goes after his son, Chas V'Shalom. That would be Ritzicha, and that's certainly not Nichlal. And in fact, the Gra says on this pasuk, sparing the rod, meaning hitting the son, is really symbolic. It just means, you know, you have discipline. You don't let the son be hefker. And the hitting could be with something like a shoelace. In other words, just, you know, pasuk. If you ever see, maybe you remember it, but you've seen parents or whatever it is, sometimes you just tap, you know, a two-year-old. You just go to a two-year-old. Let's say a two-year-old is about to put his finger in an electric socket or something, right? So you have to stop him, or they're going to touch fire. So you give him a little, just like that, not much harder, and the kid starts crying because hitting has a certain symbolic meaning. It does not refer to pain or whatever. It is a little bit, you know. So the Gra says that This is not about chas v'shalom hurting somebody. And the whole seer of the Gemara is not what we think. It's not the pshat because of the brutality of the force the kid died. If the force was so brutal that it would kill somebody, that's certainly not a mitzvah at all. It means it was an accident, meaning the father is doing moderate discipline and the child slips on the floor and breaks his head. I mean, that would be the seer. It would not be, you know, a brutality that is kedei lahamis. If it's a brutality that's kedei lahamis, the Gemara says it's a dever pashat. That would be Ritzicha. Now, with respect to that, Rav Volba says, that Bizman Hazeh, we shouldn't hit at all. And he says, Shlomo HaMelech was not making a point about hitting. He was basically saying that you have to have discipline. You know, you can't let things be hefker. So hitting was the mushal that was used. But in every door, one has to assess what is the best way of reaching a child. And in our generation, any type of physical force is not the appropriate term. Yeah. What happened to our generation? It's very true. I mean, this changes a lot of things. First of all, you know, there's this NFL player. I just noticed. He's in big trouble because he hit his kid or something. And he said that's the way he was raised. And we know what's the problem. Okay. So you see, times are changing, right? But anyway, the thing is that everything changes in this way. You know, we're a door. They say the musr. We're not able to take strong musr. We're not able to take midas hadin. And part of it is when a person is weaker because we're spiritually more lazy, we're less introspective, we are spoiled in many ways. So therefore, certain types of things that would have been effective to bring us back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in previous generations push us away today. Today, if a kid feels rejected in any way, they just walk further and further away. Now another...
Huh?
Even by Musr, but Revolva, who of course was a great Bal Musr, did say that we don't do physical hitting. And I'll tell you another perspective too. I remember, now the Busner Rebbe is Rav Meir Horowitz in Harinov, but his father, Rav Levi Yitzchak, Zechorno Lebracha, was a Rebbe. He was here for many years, but he was in Boston for more years. And in fact, even after he moved to Harinov, he used to go back to Boston, Badafka during the winter. Who goes to Boston during the winter? But he went because that's when students would need him and he would still make himself available there. So I remember he used to tell a story that his father, who was the first Busner Rebbe, when I first heard about something called the Busner Rebbe, I thought, I guess Boston must be in the Ukraine. It must be a city in the Ukraine. But no, Busner Rebbe is Boston. Although there's the Busner Rebbe of New York and the Busner Rebbe of Arnav, and there's even a Busner Rebbe still in Boston. The younger brother is the Busner Rebbe of Boston. But he used to tell about his father, Reb Pinchas David, that his father did hit him. That was the minhag of European people. They would hit. But he said his father always waited 24 hours before he hit him. Waited 24 hours. What's the pshat? Because the father said, I'm not going to hit a child because I'm angry, I'm upset. If I'm hitting a child because I'm angry, I'm losing control, then I'm using my child as a punching bag. What type of hetzer is that? He says, I think for 24 hours I'm not angry, and I then make a cheshbon ha-nefesh, is this the right thing for my child, or is it not the right thing? And if I do it, it is only because it is the right thing for his hadracha and for his chinuch. So he says his father would never, bedafka, not to act. And the truth is, we could extrapolate that. That is not only for hitting, that's even for yelling. That's for everything. Because there is a heter indeed to have strong discipline for a child. There is such a heter. But it has to be for the tayelus of the child, not because you're upset. If a person reacts a certain way because they're angry, you're using the child, you're being mavaz of the child. I mean, the yisra of arnas devarim, the yisra of malbim pnei chaveira, this applies to your child as well. Indeed, the famous Maisa. To a katan, maybe it's more chamer because a katan can't give you mechila. You know, I mentioned before the famous Maisa with the stifler, that the stifler once told a 9-year-old child in Rosh Hashanah not to learn Gemara during davening when the child was carrying a big sitter for his grandfather, big machzer. So stipler thought was a Gemara. So the stipler asked the child, when is your bar mitzvah? Kid said, 4 years from now, Parshas Truma. 4 years later, the stipler walks 2 miles. The stipler could barely walk 5 feet, but he walked 2 miles on Shabbos to this boy's bar mitzvah. I mean, they were amazed to see him. They didn't invite him. They didn't expect him to come. They didn't know him. He speaks to the boy, and then he just turns back and walks another 2 miles back. And they say, what did he tell you? He says, well, he asked my mechila for hurting me 4 years before. So a parent does not have to apologize for giving his son mussar. But if it's stamazai angry, not for the tielos of the child, it's a big chisarin. So that might be another reason why it might be advised that we don't do these physical things, simply because who can say our kavanah is l'shem shemayim? You know, we're doing, even by Yaakov Avinu there was such a time. You know, the famous, this parsha we're going to read, about Dina, right? So Dina walks out, and she gets assaulted. She gets taken by Shechem ben Hamor. And there's a medrash that says that Yaakov put Dina in a box. Yaakov was afraid that Esau would marry Dina. Not a box, whatever, in other words. So he kept Dina very closed off, that she would not have any encounter with Esau in any particular way. And that was considered to be a chisaron, because perhaps Dina could have brought Esav back to tshuva, and Yaakov was mineya this opportunity of chesed to Dina, to Esav. So therefore, he was nanash by Dina getting assaulted by someone who was worse than Esav, you know, Shechem ben Hamor. So people ask the kasha, what on earth is going on here? If I don't want my daughter to marry Esav, there's some aveira there. In other words, there's an aveira that I don't want her to marry Esav. What is that? For us, we could never be batuach that our daughter could do such a miracle. But Dina was on the madrega where she could have done a miracle, and Yaakov perhaps should have known that, right? That's one teretz, that indeed. But that the Alter Slobodka says like this. Alter Slobodka says, the way he expresses it is, it was perfectly correct to put Dina in a box, but Yaakov shouldn't have banged the nail so hard. which he means to say is that Yaakov had mixed kavanas. On one hand was the objective reality, that how could I marry my daughter off to a Rasha, you know, who could be makalkil everything. And that's a correct cheshbon. But there was something else in which I'm not going to give my brother, you know, I'm not going to give my brother that satisfaction. And mashu sheba mashu of some personal pleasure in Esav not getting the prize, that was enough for Yaakov to be nanash. So the same thing with hitting, with discipline, all of these different things, that if you have a little bit of kavanah, of getting your anger out, that could make the whole thing possible. Yeah.
The village of Shem, right, the prince of Shem, he circumcised the whole tribe that they had.
Well, that was Shimon and Levi's proposal, right?
And the thing is, for them, for their willingness to do it, it must have been they were very fascinated by Dina. In that case, maybe if Dina was so on such a madriga that they were willing to cut up the whole Shem, not cut up to circumcise themselves because of her, maybe she had the call to change Asa.
Well, that's what I said. There are those that say that Dina would have had that power. But still, you can't fault, I mean, it's like, walking into a minefield. I mean, you know, you can't fault any father, just with Derech HaTeva, to say, I don't want my daughter to marry a Russian. Maybe she'll make him a tzaddik. All right, you know, maybe she will.
Absolutely.
Maybe she won't. I mean, that's certainly not a proposal you make for a shidduch and then have a taina. Why didn't you marry her off to this bad guy? I mean, you know, you're wasting, you know, marrying your daughter to a tzaddik. What a waste. He's a tzaddik. You know, this way she could really do something with her life. You know, make her rush into a tzaddik. You know, okay. I mean, yeah.
But why should Dina herself be punished?
Why should Dina be punished? That is a good question, because ultimately the punishment was on Dina. So the emes is, that's why you have to combine two things. Now, if you look at the Chazal say two things. They say Yaakov was nanash because he withheld her from Esav, Dina was Nanash because Lehepach, she was a Yatsanis, meaning she apparently, maybe she was trying to be Makarif, who knows, but she was apparently frequenting, walking around, talking to people, schmoozing with people, and that was considered to be a Chisor and a Tzmiya. So really, it's a combination. Yaakov would not have suffered such a tragedy had Yaakov not had a chait, and it wouldn't have happened to Dina had Dina not had a chait, right? So you need chatoim on both sides of that that equation, yeah.
Okay, so on the point of not hitting, not yelling,
yeah.
So it's nice, what is the classical
way of distinction? Discipline are things like you have rules, all sorts of things. I mean, timeout, you sit with the child and you tell the child, explain to me what the child's a little older, what you did wrong, and do you understand why you did it was wrong, etc. You have to be firm. Timeout is good. Going out and playing. Whatever the discipline would be, things like that. But I'll tell you a beautiful story that Rav Schwab used to say. Beautiful, beautiful story. Rav Schwab was the Rav of Washington Heights for many years, and Rav Schwab was a bit of a interesting figure in some ways because he grew up with the German Rav Shimshon Fal Hirsch, Tyreim Derech Eretz. His family very much believed in, secular education, going to university, becoming a frum balabas, but he was one of the few German boys who went to learn in the Eastern European Litvishe yeshivas. He went to Mir. And Mir had all different hashkafa, no secular, Torah only. And you have to understand, we're used to it here already, to a frum German Jew who was a Talmud of Rav Shimshon Fal Hirsch, this was very bizarre, very bizarre. What do you mean, all you're going to do is learn? How are you going to make a living? I mean, the same things that, as I say, secular people say, this was a whole frum world that felt really very much the same way. Different world, mamish, different hashkafa, totally. But now, this is a whole issue within Breuers, within the Breuers Kehila. So many of the children of the founding Balabatim are in Lakewood and Kololim, and some of the founding Balabatim are very upset. They say this is a betrayal of the heritage of our Kehila. And now the Rav, the assistant Rav, Rav Montel, spoke at a yard site for Rav Shimshon Fal Hirsch, and he said something about, the day of Torah Derech Eretz is gone. The proof is gone. What? in the middle, they wanted to pull him off the day. Whatever. So the older people, the younger people, talk, I agree with it, but the older people wanted to pull him off the dais. They were too old. They couldn't pull him off. But the old time is like they have 80-year-old, 90-year-old people who they're very committed. So Rav Schwab, right? But Rav Schwab was a very interesting person because Rav Schwab, in a sense, was mechaber the two worlds. He was shakua as a young man in Torah Derech Eretz, and then he was exposed to Mir. And especially Rav Yeruchim was a tremendous, as he was for everyone, that Rav Yeruchim was mashpia on a tremendous, tremendous hashpa. Rav Volba was the same way, although it's not clear. Rav Volba may have even come from a non-religious home. It's a little unclear. Rav Schwab came from a very frum home, but it was a Torium Derech Eretz. But it was a very disciplined home, the Yekesher discipline. So the story goes that if he misbehaved, whatever Rav Schwab did, if he misbehaved, so every morning, breakfast was bread and jam. So if you misbehaved, you didn't get jam that day. That was a sign. But, listen to this. Any day that a child didn't get jam, the father and mother didn't eat jam either. Like, imo anochi b'tzara. And Rav Schwab said, in other words, I have to discipline you, but you should know how much it hurts me that you didn't do something right. And Rav Schwab said, he says, the biggest discipline was seeing his parents not having the jam. That hurt much more. He realized how much he hurt his parents, and that resolved, to him. Then he said another story about discipline. Again, it's a little harsh. I'm not sure if this would work today. This is during a Pesach Seder. They're going over the four sons. And the kids are little, the kids are young, we're 8, 9, whatever it is. So he says, do you think that, mommy and me love you, Abba, whatever they call them, Uma and Abba, whatever it is. I said, yeah. He says, but you know, we love Hashem more. We love the Torah more. So, if you would be a Rasha, you have to be a Chacham. If you would be a Rasha, you know, we would have to, you know, yeah, kick you out. Couldn't be here. He says, so don't be a Rasha, he says. I said, that's the, that might be maybe older school discipline. I'm not sure if that works today. No, but I'll tell you, this shaila comes up a lot. Even the Gabi intermarriage. You know, the minhag of, there's no old minhag that's already brought from very early Makaris, that if Chas v'Shalom a person marries outside of Yiddishkeit, intermarries, so the family sits Shiva, and they regard the person as dead. As dead? Yeah, whoever, man or woman, makes no difference. But Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said that Bezman Hazeh, if a family has such a distressing situation, they should not sit Shiva for care. They have to still try to keep up contact, keep up Sheikhas, because that's the only way. In other words, in the olden days, it might have been sit Shiva, so the child realizes what he's done, that may cause him to do Shiva. Today, it's the other way around. We'll just separate. By the way, it's brought down Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom, and we don't realize, like, we don't realize the godless of Rabbeinu. Rabbeinu Gershom is really the first Rishon. I don't know if you realize this. Some say he was even a Talmud of Rav Haigon. Some say, so it's not Barra, but he was right after Rav Haigon. And Rashi writes about Rabbeinu Gershom, that Rabbeinu Gershom, you know, kept the whole Torah alive. He was really the first Rishon in Germany and the like. But Rabbeinu Gershom lived during Crusades, and Rabbeinu Gershom's son, it is recorded, because of torture and the like, became a Meshumad, became a Christian. So it is recorded, although it's not clear where he got this, Rabbeinu Gershom sat a double Shiva. He sat 14 days. Now, it's not clear. There seems to be a machlekes in later Makairis. What is this 14-day Shiva? Some say it just was two different Shivas. One Shiva when the son converted, and then another Shiva when the son died. So it was just two different things that may have been separated by a few years. Others say that since Gadol HaMachtiyo Yaisim in Ahorge, that sinning against Hashem is worse than dying, so Rabbeinu Gershom made the Avelis double for that period. It's not Baruch exactly. Was it a consecutive 14 days, or was it 7 days and then later 7 days? But so at least the concept of sitting Shiva, now that's a conversion. That may not be the same as an intermarriage, but the concept of someone repudiating Yiddishkeit being considered dead and having a Shiva, at least you see on some level a precedent. From
a Rabbeinu Gershom. Shiva, like halachic thing, and like it's a very halachic aspect. Therefore, the person has to say it if it's halachically when there's a somebody passed away. If somebody didn't pass away, you said like halachically it's not.
Well, we do have a concept. I'll give you another example in a more benign way. We do have a concept of optional shiva. Now, in fact, a very good example is a ger. Let's say a person converts to Judaism. And then his parent dies. Now, the parent might be Jewish. Let's say a father and a son both convert to Judaism. Me'ikar hadin, or an adopted child, me'ikar hadin, there is no avelus. The son does not have to sit shiva for the father at all, but it's brought down in Paiskim as a matter of hakaras atov, of gratitude. It is appropriate to sit shiva. That's why an adopted child will sit shiva for a parent, and certainly if he's a biological parent, but they both converted, so Shiva's not mandatory. Now, you can't use an optional Shiva to Lakula. I mean, you can't, as it were, miss Kriyas HaTorah or something because you can't leave the house, even a real level, theoretically. But in other words, but whatever it is, if you can have a minion in the house, whatever, there is a musig of optional Shiva. So it's not foreign to Halacha. We allow a person to do Shiva for other things. Now, the emes is Rav Vajja has a tshuva, who even allows an optional Shiva for a non-Jewish parent. Now, this could be in a few situations. This could be a person's father is not Jewish, their mother is Jewish. According to Halacha, they have no yichus to that father. They could sit Shiva. And certainly, if the father also converted, they could sit Shiva. Rav Avadya says, even to say Kaddish. Some say Kaddish doesn't work because Kaddish is only for a Jewish parent. Okay, but be it as it may, an optional shiva is not unknown.
But nowadays, with the divorce rate so high, like anybody who in their marriage days, so they get divorced within a year, I'm not sure. So in a way, if a person would have to say shiva for them, then they might get married every 2 years, because these things just don't work.
Well, okay. All right. All right. Really, yeah, okay.
It's sort of like I know, but based on what Kavim Vanya said, we should know from such things, but would that apply to somebody who has a very, very close kesher with a great gadol b'tera, and a great gadol, let's say somebody was very close to Kavim Vanya, and somebody said national shema based on this sort of kula or
I can't say that it would be usher, but that I think we're not noyeg. The only thing we're noyeg, which might be even a chiyuv, is if someone is rabbi mufuk, you rip kriya.
Yeah.
That much is so, and if a person was very close and he ripped kriya, that may even be a chiyuv. That's appropriate. To sit shiva zelo matzin. In other words, you only find sitting shiva for someone that had a relationship of parent to you, even if halpi halacha there's no yichus. But it's still ke'ein a shiva because there is a parental child relationship. But the stamazai taken on the Rebbe, say Rebbe is like a father.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that I haven't seen. I'm not aware of even the closest talmidim actually sitting shiva for a Rebbe. Okay, all right. So basically that's the idea of discipline. And again, the first pasuk says ben chacham musarav. That if a child is a chacham, this comes from the musar of the father. Now, I will tell you a story which I don't like at all, but I'll tell you the story. I really don't like the story, but I'll tell it to you. And that is the Briskerov, Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, was the son of Rav Chaim, right? And Rav Chaim was matab. Rav Chaim put a lot of kochos into the Briskerov from a very young age, as you might expect. And he would typically give the Briskerov all sorts of difficult, shilas, stiras, contradictions, and say, give me a teretz. And if the Briskerov would give a teretz, but it wasn't the one Rav Chaim wanted in terms of the depths of thought, he would sometimes hit the Briskerov. Right? So somebody once saw Rav Chaim hitting the Briskerov. I mean, let's say Briskerov was a little child, hitting Rav Yitzchak Zev. Hitting him, he says, why are you hitting him? You know, what are you doing? You know, somebody really didn't really like this. And Rav Chaim didn't even answer. So he says, like 10 years later, the same guest shows up, and the Briskerov is saying chidushim, and Rav Chaim is sitting there with awe and admiration, you know, for Rav Chaim himself. And Rav Chaim just says to the guest, that's why. You asked me a question 10 years ago? This is the end. I don't like that story so much, but that's the getter of Ben Chacham comes from the Musar. It does illustrate Ben Chacham comes from the Musar of the Yad. Okay. Say again? Yeah, that's right. I like that one better, but All right. But listen, okay.
Oh,
yeah, a brisker chumah. Okay. In fact, by the way, Rav Chaim was so into teaching the brisker of how to think that even in Mili D'Alma, in other words, if they would be walking, he would say, "Why is this building built this way and not this way?" He wants the brisker to come up with svaras for everything. He'd say, "Why this? Why that? Why that? Why that?" So Rav Chaim would even say, if they see somebody walking in the street that they knew, and says, why is that person going that way? What do you think? So one time, they tell Maisa, that one time, and it bothered Rav Chaim, and Rav Chaim himself didn't have a terrace, because Rav Chaim wanted to try to understand everything. So Rav Chaim once sees a person walking in the street, and he says to Briskerov, why is that person going there? And the Briskerov said, I don't know. And Rav Chaim says, I don't know either. This is big. I don't understand. So Rav Chaim asked the guy later. And the guy said, I don't know. I just felt like I had to walk, so I don't know why. I had no reason. So Reb Chaim couldn't see the swear. The taka was no swear. He said there was no swear at all. Okay. But the other thing Reb Chaim that was so gavalic is that he had such a shalita. I think I mentioned this before. He had such a shalita in how to approach learning that he used to, this was a game he would play with people. He would tell them if they had a certain achron. He didn't look in a lot of achronim. The famous ones were Kivager, but he didn't look in a lot of achronim because he had his ma'alchim. So he would tell somebody, tell me a kasha of this sefer and tell me a teretz of this sefer. Then ask me any other kasha that this sefer asks on the Masechta, and I will tell you that teretz. In other words, by Rav Chaim hearing one teretz, he was able to understand the derech hamachshava of the mechaber, and therefore he could be mechabing to any other kasha that the sefer asked. He used to do this. He said, okay, tell me what. So he was able to understand like all the different ways of thinking that a person could have. And even though he didn't agree with most of them. In other words, it was interesting that, because when you have a very, very deep Havana, you can even understand the mistakes in someone else's thinking. In other words, if something is not 100% clear to you, even though, you know, you understand it, if someone else has a different approach, you know, you just feel it's not right, but you can't really go into the approach. And even, he was able to go into the approach, say how this person would resolve it, and then be able to also point out why it wasn't good. In other words, Rabbi Yerucham said in Reb Chaim that he penetrated into the neshama of the Torah. The Torah has a guf and a neshama. The guf is our general understanding of Torah. But there's a penemius of the neshama in which you see how everything works. And it says Reb Chaim was zeicha to go into the penemius of the neshama of Torah. It's an amazing thing. Okay. Let's look at Pasuk Beis. And here the Gemara has a very beautiful comment. Mipri pi ish yaychal toiv. From the fruit of the mouth of a person. This is a phrase that Mishlei uses quite often. Right? My mouth produces fruit. In what way? The mouth is primarily the vehicle for divrei Torah. And what do we say in the Mishnah? Elu dvarim sha'adam ochel. We say this every day. You are ochel peiroseyem bi'olam hazeh. You get the fruits in this world, and the principle still survives in olam haba. And we mention a few mitzvahs, but we end with Talmud Torah kineged kulam. So the simple meaning is that this is actually a biblical makor for that at least Talmud Torah, which is P, is typically a mitzvah whose peiros you will eat even in this world. But the Gra adds an important twist. The way we would translate it is, the fruit of the mouth of a person, from that fruit he shall eat good. In other words, good is grammatically the object. It is what is he consuming. He will be consuming the good. The Gra suggests that instead of it being the object, it can be the subject. The Hebrew is a little ambiguous. A phrase, yochal tov. Yeah, two words. Yochal tov. Does yochal tov mean he shall eat the good? Or does it mean the good shall eat? You understand? In other words, in English, you would be able to tell by the position of the word. In Hebrew, yochal tov. So the Gra wants to say that tov is the subject. From the fruit of the mouth of an ish. Now ish means a tzaddik, a righteous man. Yochal tov, a good person shall eat. Now what is a good person? So he explains that ish is a tzaddik who is zohir in bein adam l'makom. Tov is a person who is zohir in bein adam l'chaveiro. So here is the thing. And this is very important. The rule in the Mishnah in Peah that the mitzvos
some mitzvos, you get the reward in this world. Even though the Karen is Kayemes Olam Haba, only applies if you're a Tov Labrios. Okay, then it's a Mida Keneged Mida. You help other people, you make their life better and more pleasant in this world. So Hashem makes your life better and more pleasant. But mitzvos that are only Bein Adam L'makam and you're not Tov L'Brias. Now, if you look at it, this is really only going to be a problem for Talmud Torah because the other ones are by definition that way. Elohein. Right? What are the mitzvos that are enumerated that you get reward in this world and the Karen is Kayemes L'Olam Haba? Kibud Aviyem, Gemilus Chasadim. Now, Achnasas Orchim is a Shiloh if you're Dorisit. Achnasas Kala, Havayas Hames, right, bringing in, and some are Goris Achnasas Orchim. Then we say Hashtamas Beis Medrash. Okay, that's already like Talmud Torah, more or less. Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam. Now, it doesn't say, for example, if you wear tefillin every day, or you wear tzitzis, or you keep Shabbos, or you keep kashrus, you certainly get reward for that. But we don't have the promise that you'll be ochel peirei sehem bi'olam hazeh, and the keren kayemes lo li'olam haba. So the Mefarshim say that the usual rule, Torah is the exception to that, the usual rule is, it's only in mitzvahs bein adam l'chaveiro that you're zocha to the peiros in olam hazeh. Talmud Torah, because if it's great, enormous chashivas, will even give you that, but only if it's coupled with being a taiv labrios at the same time. So therefore, the Gra touches up nitri pi'ish, the fruit of the words of Torah, which will give you peirei sehem bi'olam hazeh. Who will eat those fruits? Only a person that is Tov. Because if you're not a Tov Labrios, you'll still get reward for your Torah learning, but it's only going to be Olam Haba. It's not going to be in Olam Haza. Right? So that's a good chiddush, that Tov is not the object of what you're consuming. It is the type of person who will be Zaycha to be able to consume that. Well, it says Gemilas Chasadim is on that list. So Gemilas Chasadim is referring to your personal relationship with people, not just your financial.
So business sick and...
Yeah, that depends on the Girsa, but some do include Bikur Cholim, some include Achnasas Orchim. There are different Girsos as to what you include. But certainly, even if you don't mention it specifically, it's included in Gemilas Chasadim. When you mention Gemilas Chasadim, that would include visiting the sick. That does include hachnosas orchim. All of that is gemilas chesed. So you don't. Yeah. So you don't necessarily have to mention everything separately. Now that's the first part of the pasuk, and the next part of the pasuk is nefesh beigdim chamas. Now a bogate is a treacherous person. And this refers specifically, like Ashamnu Bogadnu, right, the second word in the Vidur. And this refers specifically to a person who is not honest or not kind in his dealings with people. And this is called chamas. Now chamas, which we often interpret as theft or violence, also refers to the bad way you treat people. The Vilna Gaon says speaking harshly to people is called chamas. Why is it called chamas? Because you're robbing them of the dignity that they're b'tselem elokim. So you're robbing them of that. So it says that the nefesh of the bogate will suffer the chamas, will suffer the pain and humiliation in this world that he brought on others. In other words, the concept... Huh?
What's bogate?
A bogate is a treacherous person. That means a person who does not show others the kavod that they deserve. Okay, so what will his soul be? His soul will suffer the chamas, amida keneged. Now, if you go down just to pasuk dalit,
Jose
Chito, Sonebino, yes.
I don't know if I may have heard this, that is this the same way that you're explaining it, that someone who doesn't do this shit, he's a Jose.
No, that's what it means. Chosech shifto. If you spare, if you hold back the shevet, you hate your son. So the implication is you're supposed to hit him. But the Vilna Gaon says it refers mainly to discipline, not so much physical hakam. No, that's correct. It's expressed in the... in other words, it's really the opposite of the first pasuk. The first pasuk says, a ben chacham comes from the musr of the father. If you spare that musr, you think you're being nice to your son, you're actually hating your son. Although I did hear an interesting klal about chinuch habanim, an interesting klal that a Rebbetzin once said that anything that a child will not be doing when he's 20 years old, you don't have to correct at all because he'll just grow out of it. So she made a difference. If a child, let's say, is lying, if a child is selfish, if a child is stealing, you have to take care of that because those are midos that can continue to fester and they can turn into bad midos. But let's say a child is running around or a child can't sit at the table or the child climbs a tree, assuming it's not dangerous for him, you know, he's not going to do that when he's 20. So she says that. So what is the tayelas of disciplining for those types of things? Because you're not disciplining a child for what he's doing as a child. Really, all chinuch is al shem sofer, just like the ben sofer amore. Your goal in disciplining a child is that when he grows up, he should be a person of midos and of ben Torah, bas Torah, whatever it would be. So everything you do to the child, the machshava has to be, how is this going to impact on him as a ben Torah? So there are many things that kids do just because they're kids. And, you know, you don't have to make an issue over that.
It doesn't create for the child,
it's something to think about because you could argue that even if what a kid is doing is he's not going to do it when he's older, but he may develop an attitude, I can do whatever I want. That's a bit of a kasha on that mahalach generally, because there is something to learn that there are boundaries. But I remember that reading that when Chaim Kanevsky was 5 or 6, so the Stipler was walking with the Chazon Ish, and Reb Chaim was running in front of them, and he started climbing a tree. I don't know if it was Shabbos or even during the week, and the Stipler was very embarrassed. He was with the Chazon Ish, after all. And he kept on calling to Chaim, get down, get down, get down. And the Chazon Ish says, no. Little children are supposed to climb trees. That's what they do. That's what children do. And you don't stop a child from doing what a child needs to do. Yeah.
Since you raised the point of Shabbos,
if the child is higia l'chinuch, for sure the father has vada yachiv to be matrishim from Yisurim. That's correct. Yeah, so if it would be an Isra, you'd have to.
It would be Shabbos then. I don't know how old he was.
If he was called higia l'chinuch, you'd have to get him down from the
tree. In that case, why did Yitzchak did such a bad job of Esau? Because apparently there were a lot of signs. It's sort of like it's a big miss.
Well, what can I tell you? I mean, we know that chinuch cannot be 100% effective. There's still bechira. There's still bechira in the world, and people choose. And Shadron used to say anyway. He said if Esau would walk in today, we would all stand up for him. He says Esau was a Russia. Compared to Yaakov, but Esav had all sorts of kochos that we don't fully understand. Okay, look at Pasuk Dalet, and again, Pasuk Gimel. We'll just read the Pasuk, Neiser Piyup Shomer Napsho. When you guard your tongue, now this is not just Lashon Hara, this is connected, because we just talked about the fact that your words of Torah will give you blessing in this world only if you treat other people with kindness. And consequently, when your mouth says harsh words, denigrating words, you're going to be hurting yourself. If you guard your mouth from those words, you are protecting your nefesh. Posek sefasav, if you open your mouth in insulting ways, mechitalo, that brings you destruction. Okay. Nisava, the ayin, if a person has a taiva for things. I need this, I need that, and he doesn't get it? That is a sign, nafsho atzel. His soul is lazy. Again, the Gra says that Pasuk Dalet is really referring to Taira, as he often says. And that is, everybody in theory, okay, again, this is very reminiscent of a famous mimer of Rishol Solanter. Rishol Solanter says, used to say, everybody wants to know Shas. Sure. By offer, would you like to know Shas? Here's a pill. I'll give you this pill. You think, well, you'll know Shas. Who would not take such a pill? Everybody, right? Take the pill. Okay. So everybody wants to know Shas. And Baruch Hashem, that's an attainable goal. Everybody here should know. Everybody. Able to know Shas, right? Able to know Shas, good. Okay. But people want to know Shas in one night. That, he says, may be very difficult. Maybe the Vilna Gaon could learn Shas in one night, but most people certainly could not approach that. But then, people want to know Shas in one night and get 8 hours of sleep the same night. He says that, he thinks maybe even the Gra would have a problem. He says, the Gra never slept that many hours. He says, so what is it? People want the results, but they don't want to put the effort in. So, Misav Eviayin, you have a taiva for taira. So why don't you have it? I have a taiva for taira. Answer? Nafsho atzel. It is the laziness of the soul. Because if I really would be willing to work, yagata, right, below matzasi, yagati below matzasi, al tamen, you don't believe. So if you have a taiva for something and you don't have it, it's only because the nefesh was atzel. However, nefesh charutzim, charitzus just means conscientiousness, hasmada. You stick to the goal. You have a nefesh with the midah of charitzus. It's not such a familiar word to people, but if you look, Rabbi Sol Solanter has a list of 13 midos. Have you ever seen it? They put it up in a lot of elementary classrooms. But you put it up here too. 13 midos that a person should work on. So one of them is charitzus. Charitzus is not such a common word, but it basically means sticking to something. We would call it hasmada, but it just means that to it. And when you have a goal, you stick to it, even if you don't get immediate success. You stay with it. So nefesh charutzim, the nefesh that has charitzus, tidushan, shall be satisfied. Right, dishanta, right, shall be satisfied. And again, this is a reminder, what Chazal tell us over and over again, that if a person's miyageya b'torah, they will get hatzlacha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give them hatzlacha in many, many ways. Okay. Next pasuk. And again, as I say, it's hard to always see the connections between the psukim, and the Gra does not always connect them. Devar sheker yisnet tzadik. The tzaddik hates anything that is false. This doesn't just mean, a lie. Of course, the tzaddik is not going to lie. That's not the question. But anything that is a deviation from emes is hateful to a tzaddik. A tzaddik loves emes. When people say a vort, sometimes, the vort might be nice, it might sound nice. But if it doesn't fit the psukim, if it doesn't fit the Gemara, if it doesn't fit Rashi, somebody says a pshat, right? So to the tzaddik, who is not just looking for nice things, but is looking for true ideas, this tzaddik hates it, meaning it's a visceral feeling. If it's not emes, I don't want. And the Gra says in particular that the tzaddik is not makabel lashon hara, that's obviously. But then it says, Russia. A person that's a Rasha, Yavish. So the Gra says the following. When a Rasha hears something bad about a tzaddik, Lashon Hara about a Gadol, about a Rosh Hashiva, about a tzaddik, the Rasha gets such pleasure in finding something negative to say about a tzaddik, and he immediately spreads it, even though it's not true. The Yachbir. Yachbir is Chofer, means to dig, and he keeps on digging. Looking for more. Meaning to say that the Russia is always looking for the negatives in those that are Shomrei Torah mitzvahs. And even if it's sheker, he'll keep on digging and digging and digging and digging and exaggerating. The emesis, you shouldn't necessarily be aware of this. I shouldn't be aware of it either, but for various reasons I am sometimes aware of things that I should not be aware of. And that is that, you know, in the blogging world, the blogosphere, as they call it, whenever there's any little thing about religious Jews, and particularly Talmidei Chachamim and Tzaddikim, that, you know, might be a little negative, and sometimes it's totally a lie anyway, sometimes it might be a little emes, it turns into, you know, they just go over it and exaggerate it and build it up, and it's an indictment against Torah and mitzvahs and from Jews and yeshivas and everything else. And that's what the pasuk says. The Rasha is not only makabel lashon hara when it's sheker, but he spreads it and he digs deeper and deeper and deeper to make it much worse. And we know that Rav Chaim once gave a mashal. He said about kanais sometimes that to take the chasreinus of other people, even if they're true, and build them up to be such a negative thing. And sometimes people tell themselves, "Oh, I'm acting l'shem shemayim." So Rav Chaim said, "How do you tell a kanai who is acting l'shem shemayim versus a kanai that just likes to expose people's shortcomings in more of a deeper way?" So he says, let's imagine that there are mice in your house and you buy a cat, like Yerushalayim. That's why we have so many cats in Yerushalayim, because 150 years ago there were a lot of mice around. So the cats reproduced. So the cat and the housewife have a common agenda. If there's mice, we have to get them. But what's the nafkamina? The housewife would be much happier if there would be no mice. The cat would be very, very disappointed. Rav Chaim says, the kanoi l'shem shemayim gets no pleasure in the avlus that people do. For karet, he prays for them. He hopes that the kavod Hashem should not be compromised. There's no, gotcha, I discovered, you know, another person making some mistake, like there's some hanon getting somebody. He says everything is sar with him. If he sees Chilul Shabbos, it's not such, oh, good, I have someone else I can throw a stone at. Which are mukta anyway, I mean, with the heter throwing a stone, right? But for karet, a person feels sar for the Chilul of Kvod Shemayim, and sar for the Yid, who is not zeichet to keep the kedusha of Shabbos. But there's another type of kanai that kind of, you know, gets, you know, it's fun. I found another one. See, that's the Russia yavish v'yachbir. Let's dig and dig and dig and find people's chasreinus. You know, they say in Radin, there was it's an interesting story, there was a bacher that was found smoking on Shabbos. They didn't have a dorm, but wherever he was staying, he was smoking. Which you could imagine in Radin, okay, sometimes we have that, unfortunately. I think that's why the smoke alarm always goes off here? I don't know. But whatever, okay, I'm not going to ask questions. But anyway, but in Radin, smoking, you could imagine, would be something that would be very, very rare. And the person was ordered by whoever caught him, you have to go to the Chavetz Chaim personally. Of course, he will be kicked out of the yeshiva. So he goes to the Chavetz, and the kid is like scared. He's 16 years old. And he is just shaking and quaking. Imagine you have to go in front of the Chavetz Chaim because you were smoking on Shabbos. What are you going to do? And he's shaking. And he goes to the Chavetz Chaim. And the Chavetz Chaim is very short. This boy is already taller than the Chavetz Chaim. And the person was with the Chavetz Chaim for less than 5 minutes. And it changed the person's life. He became a Shomer Shabbos the rest of his life. So a Rav was telling this story in Florida. And a Rav said, he was talking about how you're makariv somebody. How do you influence somebody? He says, if I only knew what the Chafetz Chaim said to that boy, if I only knew, I would have the secrets of how you change a person. So all the way in the back of the room. This never happens to me. You know, all the way in the back of the room, an old man gets up and says, "I am that person. I am that boy." He's Miami. He came to America. He's Miami. So what did the Chafetz Chaim do? He says, the Chafetz Chaim, who was shorter than me, he took my hands, and his two hands, he had one hand on top, one hand below, and he held my hands tight, and I looked at his big blue eyes, striking eyes, and tears came out of his eyes, and the tears fell on my arm. And I still remember it was like fire, a fiery burn. I feel the burn of those tears to this very day, 70 years later. And Chafetz Chaim says, "Shabbos, Shabbos." And he saw in Chafetz Chaim's eyes the pain for the Shechina and the pain of the Chilul Shabbos and the pain for this Neshama. He says he could never be Mechallel Shabbos again. He says he couldn't. It would be disgusting to him to even do anything. This was the Hashpah of the Chafetz Chaim. This is how he was changed. Right? So unlike the idea of, you know, you're a bum, you know, get. Now they have another, I'm not sure if this is the same story or not. I was never able to validate this. They tell another story about a guy that was kicked out of Radin. And I don't know if it was the same person or not, where the person was, said, "You have to leave the yeshiva. We can't have you in the yeshiva anymore. You have to leave the yeshiva." So the kid gets up to leave. And the Chafetz Chaim says, "Where are you going?" He says, "Well, the Rebbe said, I have to leave the yeshiva." He says, "Yeah, you have to leave the yeshiva because, you know, you're a bad influence on other people. But chas v'shalom, that doesn't mean I'm getting rid of you. You stay at my house. And you'll live with me. And we can learn every day." It's almost, you know, I wonder sometimes, it's Chaitai Nisker, I don't know. Yeah. All the good guys who sit and learn, they don't get the Chafetz Chaim as a Chavrusha. But although I tell you, so maybe learning with the Chafetz Chaim may not be so easy either. You know, you can't be late, can't bottle, you know, it's not, you have none of the thing. But this is such a gewaldige Maisa, because here's the Maisa, every yeshiva has this problem, because you have a yeshiva, you have an achrayas to your students. You can't create, you can't just say everybody can stay because no matter what, because people influence other people, right? My chesed to let somebody stay, if that's going to ruin, you know, 10 other people, so what? I can't do that. On the other hand, how do you let somebody go? How do you just say, "Get out of here"? What happens to you is none of my business. Chafetz Chaim says, even when somebody cannot be within a yeshiva because they're a negative hashpa, you're still mechuyev to worry about them and do what you can to help them. You don't get rid of the yachid because of the rabbin. On the other hand, you don't sacrifice the rabbin because of the yachid either, right? This is Mamish said. So Mamish stayed at the Chafetz Chaim's house. The Chazanish was the same way. The Chazanish, as you know, did not have children. That's why Rav Chaim Kanevsky was so close to the Chazon Ish, because the Chazon Ish was, the Stipler's Rebbetzin was the Chazon Ish's sister. So Rav Chaim Kanevsky was the Chazon Ish's nephew, but really he was really the Chazon Ish's son, more or less. So he had two fathers. He had the Stipler and he had the Chazon Ish. But the Chazon Ish was a father to many other children. He brought children into his home, and they stayed for months, sometimes for years. And these were not Eloyim. It's interesting. I mean, because Rav Chaim was, you might say, was his good son. Okay. But most of the kids he brought into his home, we would consider, say, problem children, children who were maybe kicked out of yeshiva, people who weren't totally from. Some of them were not Shomer Shabbos. And not everybody became Shomer Shabbos. They remember, you might meet somebody, I don't know how many of you left there, but you might meet some Chiloni in Tel Aviv. He says, yeah, I was in the Chazanish's house for 2 years. Wonderful man. And they were changed. They were changed. I mean, their attitude, I mean, it's true. Anyone that was in his house, even if he was not Zeicha, let's say, to make them Shomer Shabbos, But their attitudes towards Torah are very, very different. They're people who, you know, they're machshiv Torah. They, you know, they do what they can. I mean, they admit that they're not living the correct life. But there is no hostility. Himamish turned them around then, and in that way, there was a haslacha in that as well. So quite a few. I don't have numbers, but quite a few kids were went through the Chazon Ish's house. Some for a month at a time, some for a year at a time. But he tried to rehabilitate kids in different ways. Yeah.
How do you make sure that you're not? I'm sure the Chazon Ish is very, I guess, relatively. But how do you know he's not affecting you?
Well, that is an issue. I mean, keep in mind, I mean, the Chazon Ish was much older. I mean, the Chazon Ish was already in his 60s, 70s when he had these kids. But the truth is, even in Vilna, he did this. In fact, there was a famous Yiddish author, totally secular, he even intermarried, Chaim Grada. He wrote in Yiddish, a famous Yiddish author. And imagine this, when he lost his father at a young age, he lived in Vilna. And his mother wanted to get him a tutor, so she hired the young Chazon Ish to be Chaim Grada's tutor. And they learned for 5 years, I think every day for 5 years. I mean, imagine this. And in his novels, he writes about rabbis in Europe, and many of his main character in some of his novels is actually the Chazon Ish. And people who know say that the best biographical description of what the Chazon Ish was really like was Chaim Grada's novels. Because unlike, let's say, the Haredi world that tries to, you know, make all our Gedolim to be Malachim, he tells it the way it really is. But what is amazing is, and this I think is amazing, yeah, he tells it the way it really is, the Chazon Ish still comes out like a Malach. I mean, that's a tremendous thing. Here you have a Chiloni, you have a guy who rejects Torah, you have a guy who married a non-Jewish woman, And he portrays the warts of Eastern European society, the chesronos. Chazon Ish is pure and righteous and good. So it's an amazing thing. Yeah. So even the people who bedafka would not have any reason to make it so good are makir. We're makir. It's a very, very amazing thing. And I think that gives it, the truth of the matter is, that gives it a lot of credibility in that way. You know, because sometimes, you know, we write our biographies and, you know, we do all this and that, but here it's all true. It's all true. And this was a young Chazon Ish. This is the Chazon Ish that nobody knew about. You know, he was not known. You know, he was a nister. He was a virtually unknown person till his late 50s when he came to Eretz Yisrael. This is the Chazon Ish at 30. I mean, he was a totally unknown person, a younger man, a kollel guy, you know. He was learning all day. That's what he was doing. But, he was not meforsim in any way. Oh, but back to your question. So how do you know? The answer is, you know, what can I tell you? You don't know. And sometimes there's a trial and error in life. But what you need to know is that if you're going to get involved in any type of kiruv, you need to strengthen yourself with the resources that can build you up as well. So, if part of your time is going to be with people who are very rachuk from Torah, you have to have a large part of your time with people who are very strong in Torah. And in that way, the more you build up your panemius, then you'll be able to deal with that as well. You know, it is always a risk. You know, that's always true. Yeah. Okay. All righty. Now go down to, just we'll do two more psukim, go down to Zion. I'm sorry, before that. Vav, the Gemara has a very fascinating comment about Vav. Sadaka Titzor Tam Derech. Okay, Tam Derech, we know Tam, right? We know Tam from the four sons. And the Tam is the simple person who is not aware of these subtleties. Now, it doesn't mean mentally deficient, God forbid. Yaakov is called Tam. But a Tam is an accepting, unquestioning person. And sometimes a Tam Derech in particular, not just plain Tam, but Tam Derech means a person who is naive and potentially might be fooled by the promises of other people and the like. So such a person does run a danger, Right? People offer to sell him the Brooklyn Bridge. People say, invest your money with me and there'll be a great, great rate of return. So what we say is the following. Tzedakah, when a person, now here tzedakah refers, the Gra says, not only to charity, but to Bein Adam L'Chaveiro generally. That this is yet another. In other words, we mentioned before that one of the milas of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro is it unlocks the ability to be Ochel Peiroseihem B'Olam Hazeh. Right, it gives you the Ochel Peiroseihem B'Olam Hazeh. The other is, actually maybe a reflection of that, the other is that in Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, Hashem will protect you. In other words, since you do your best to show goodness to other people, Hashem will protect you from being victimized by other people. Right? It's kind of a mita keneged mita. Now, this is interesting because you might think in common experience the other way around. You might think the nicer I am to people, the more gullible I am, the more I'm taken in. We say no. The Eibishter will give you a shemira. Tzedakah will protect the simple, naive, and gullible from being taken in. Okay, one shouldn't worry. People can cheat you. People can, if you're gullible, you can accept all sorts of proposals that people give you. Tzedakah will protect you. Now, the next part of the pasuk is once again subject-object confusion. Risha tisalef chatas. Now, first of all, even if all you had to do was translate these words, it would not be easy. We can translate each word separately. Risha is evil. Tisalef is to pervert or make crooked. And chatas is sin. Evil perverts sin. What does that mean? And to make it even more confusing, it could also be translated sin perverts evil, because you could, in other words, the question is in Lashon HaKodesh, you could say risha tisalef chatas. Chatas is misalef risha. So does it mean risha is misalef chatas? Or does it mean, I hope you can see that in Hebrew, you can translate it either way. Or does it mean, chatas is misalef risha, and in any event, what does it mean? What is risha, what is chatas? So the Vilna Gaon gives two explanations here. First, he quotes a famous pasuk. And this is famous, actually it's very interesting. It's we read it in Haftarah today, of all things. Although, did you notice that the second half of today's Haftorah is the Haftorah of Shabbos Shuvah that we read between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? You know, they say with real estate that the three most important rules of real estate is location, location, location. So the emes is, for tefillah too, location is very significant. You know, it's funny that when we say certain things on Rosh Hashanah, like Olenu, we say three times a day. Although some people say Olenu should be called Tfilas HaDerech, because people are saying it on the way out. So Olenu, so you know, we go through it quickly, we don't think about it so much all the time. You know, Olenu, it's like the very end of davening. And yet, all of a sudden, it's the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. Malchias Achronos Shofros. Olenu L'Shabeach. Totally different. It's the same Olenu. Location. When it's in the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, it's different than when it's the mincha of a regular Sunday afternoon. So, Shabbos Shuvah may be the same thing. You know, somehow when we hear the Haftarah between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we think about Shuvah, we think about all of these things. But never if we read it Parshas Vayetze, you know, I thought we finished that Shuvah stuff already. Right? Great relief. I still have to worry about that, you know, as it were. But the pasuk says, the famous pasuk from Shabbos Shuvah, which we read today, Shuva Yisrael Ad Hashem Elokecha, return to Hashem, ki kashalta b'aveinecha, you have stumbled through your sin. So the Gemara asks the following kasha. Koshalta, stumbling, is the term for an accident. I'm walking, I don't see where I'm going, I trip, stumble. Avayin is an intentional sin, amazing. Right? We have three levels of sin. Chait is inadvertence. Avayin is when I commit an intentional sin because of taiva. I'm hungry and I have the ham sandwich. Pesha is a higher level or a lower level. That's where you're not even hungry, but you do the sin lahachis. But l'chol apachis, avayin, is mason. So frek de Gemara, how can I talk about koshalta? You stumbled in your avayin. So the Gemara's answer is that this is the meaning of avera gareris avera. That when a person starts off rebelling against Hashem intentionally in one area, then even in the areas that he doesn't want to sin, he will be nichshal again and again in many averas because he is removed or he has minimized his divine protection. Ki koshalta bi'avonecha. Because of your avonos, you have increased your michsholim, your shogegs. Right? Your shogegs will come from your mazits because you become less spiritually sensitive. You've corrupted yourself by the avayin. That is called avera goreris avera. So even the things you didn't want to do wrong, you're going to find yourself doing them wrong and wrong. Right. So based on that Gemara, the Gra wants to say the following. Maybe we can say that Risha is equivalent to Avayin, right? Intentional sin. And Chatas is equivalent to Chet. So now the Pasuk is beautiful. Risha Tisalef Chatas. The intentional sins that you commit, Tisalef, will lead to a crookedness in that you will be caused to commit chatos as well, exactly as the pasuk says, ki koshalta b'yavonecha. Now, according to that first pshat, risha is the subject, right? Risha, the intentional sins, will cause a crookedness that will lead to chatos. So risha is the thing that will cause the chatos, right? That's the first pshat of the Gra, and that's an important idea. That as we become less sensitive to ruchnius because of our intentional averas, then we're going to be missing things more and more, right? So let's say, again, just to give simple examples, the person goes out all night partying, even though they fully intend to get up for davening and learning, you know, it's more likely that they're going to miss those things. And that might be a chait, but the chait comes from the avayin. Now, so according to the first pshat, risha means intentional sin, and chatas means unintentional sin. That's the first pshat. Now, he then gives a second pshat, which gives a different translation to these words. And he wants to say, the Gra, that risha means transgressing a negative commandment, meaning being over on a leisase. And here we're not mechalik if it's mezid or shogeg, but risha is a lo sase, and chatas is an ase. Now the reason why that might be so is because the actual translation of chet is to miss a target. When you shoot an arrow at a target and you miss the target, we call that lahachti es hamatara. You miss the target. So what is a chet? When I miss the opportunity, I could have done a mitzvah saseh, and I didn't do the mitzvah saseh. Now here, the Gra says, syntactically, we're going to reverse it. And that is that instead of saying the risha will cause the chatas, he learns the chatas will cause the risha. And that is that if a person is not zohir in looking for opportunities to do mitzvah saseh, eventually he will lose his sensitivity and he will be Ibran Lysasis. So a person might think, for example, Why should I go out of my way to give tzedakah, do chesed, or, you know, even if a person says, let's say I'm not going to be zoyer in kriyas shma or tefillah. Now, good, I'm mevatel a mitzvah saseh, but the truth of the matter is, the punishment for a bitul aseh is not so chamer. Right? Doing a loisas is much more chamer, much more severe avera than a bitul aseh. The Gemara even says, if you don't do a mitzvah saseh, the punishment of Hashem only comes at a time of anger, although we don't know when that is, and that, you know, now is indeed an Eden Rizcha. But the Gra says, this too is Avera Gereris Avera, that the person that is not a Rodev Achar Mitzvah Saseh is eventually going to be led down to the path of Risha, as well. So according to the Gra, this Pasuk might be telling me two different things. One is that the intentional sin can lead one to the unintentional sin. The other idea is, if you're not affirmatively being rodef mitzvos haseh, you will eventually be nichshal even in the mitzvos leisa. So let's take a practical example of how that might work. Let's take Shabbos Kodesh. Okay, Shabbos Kodesh, we have a mitzvah of Zochar Yom HaShabbos, which is Kiddush, Suda Shabbos, but in a more generic sense, the positives of Shabbos is to celebrate it as a holy day, a special day, a miyuchadik day, a day of my connection with Hashem. That's the positive, right? The negative is don't do malacha. Now, theoretically, if a person slept in all day, didn't chained himself to his bed, he did no malacha. He did not violate the losas of Shabbos. So let's say a person says, you know, this long davening bores me. The sudas bore me. I just don't, you know, I want to stay in my room. I want to read my book. I won't do anything wrong on Shabbos. So you might think, well, Nebuch, he's missing out the mitzvah to say of Shabbos, but at least he's keeping the malachas. The Gra is saying, no. If you're mezalzel in the mitzvah to say of Shabbos, it's going to come. You're not going to take malachas that seriously either. Because you're going to say, what's the big deal if I turn on the light? What's the big deal if I rip the toilet paper? Well, what's the big deal? Because once Shabbos is not a special day for you, then what's going to be the point of not doing malachas? At some point, you know, it literally almost seems stupid. I mean, I'm spending the whole day, I'm reading the newspaper, I'm doing everything else, but I can't, you know, turn on a light. Like, you know, why not? So the Gra is saying, the person shouldn't think, oh, even if I'm not right if the essays, at least I'm not over on the leisases, because it's inevitable if you don't care about the essays, the leisases are not going to be significant in your eyes, simply because the mitzvahs as a whole are not special to you anymore. Right? So those are two different pshatim in how to learn the risha to saleif chatas. Okay, two more psukim, then we'll finish. Pasuk Zion, Yesh misasher v'yenlo. Some people seem to be rich and they have nothing. Mis Roshesh, and some people are poor. Vahon Rav, and they have great wealth. Simple meaning of the pasuk, of course, is appearances are deceiving. There are people who look rich who are really poor. People who look poor and are really rich do not pay attention to what things look like. The world is a deceiving and deceptive place. The Gra Kedarkei says, this is a remes to Torah. There are people who seem to be rich in Torah, but if their Torah was not acquired by yegia, by work and by effort, they're just reading the, again, the example he gives, which he often gives, is to, you know many halachos from the books of anthologies. You haven't done the sugyas, you haven't learned the gemaras, but you know, you're able to, you have the Bar Ilan CD-ROM, so you can do a computer search, and you know all of these things, but kind of in a superficial way. That looks like wealth, but it's not really there. On the other hand, Mis Roshesh, a Talmud Chacham, is often very humble. A Talmud Chacham often doesn't show you the knowledge that he has. A Talmud Chacham Bedafka doesn't come out, right? He's Mis Roshesh. He looks like he has nothing. Vahon Rav. But there's huge, huge wealth. If you remember, the Gra said before that hon itself, hon means wealth, but Hon is a remez to the wealth of Torah, because Hey is Chamisha Chumshei Torah, and Vav are the six orders of the Mishnah, and Nun are the 50 layers of understanding of Kabbalah and the like. So on one hand, it's telling you a few things. It's warning you against superficiality. Number two, it's telling you that Talmud Chacham is humble. And number three, humble, not only, see, humble, there are two aspects of humility here. One is the humility of not showing everything that you might know. Why do people have to know that? The other is the humility of being willing to learn from other people. Halo made me call Adam. These are two different aspects of the humility of the Talmud Chacham. One is the lo made me call Adam, and the other is Hatznei Aleches. He's modest and humble about his learning. He doesn't have to show others. You know, think about Rabbi Yosha. Again, we could say it by many, many, many Gedolim. And in fact, there are many people that, you know, this would apply to that I can't even name because they're so humble, I don't know about them. You know, hidden Yerushalayim is filled with hidden people who, you know, we would be amazed, you know, at what they know. They're not famous, they're not Rosh Hashivas, people who know Shas. But I know two things about Rabbi Yashiv. You know, Rabbi Yashiv, as a young man, was just an Avreich, was learning in a kollel. And, you know, that Reichem, this was, I think this was a very chashuva kailo. And people, you know, speaking and learning, animated and yelling and screaming and, you know, different shatim. And Rabbi Yashiv, like, never said anything. He was very quiet. He never said anything. So his own chavrusa said on him later, you know, we thought he really wasn't following. You know, he knew basic Gemara. We know that. He was able to follow. But, you know, he really wasn't. This advanced stuff was probably above him. Until one day, Yashiv got discovered, basically. How did he get discovered? Rav Herzog, who was the Rav HaRashi, was the first chief rabbi of Israel, a big Talmud Chacham, he came to this kailo with difficult Shaila Vaguna. He wanted to hear what people had to say. And this one said this. And Rav Yashiv had to speak, because everybody had to speak. Rav Herzog was so nispoil over Rebbe Yashiv's Havana and his knowledge of Shas and Paiskin and everything, that not only that, he made Rebbe Yashiv a Dayan, right? That's how Rebbe Yashiv became a Dayan. Rebbe Yashiv might be, I'm not sure, might be the only Dayan in the state of Israel who never took a test. Dayan is a test. You don't just get, you know, have to take a Bechina. He didn't take a Bechina. He just got picked, as it were. So that's the story of Hatznei Aleches. You know, no one even knew that, you know, he knew. He knew so much. The other story about Lo Made Me Kol Adam, and this for Art Scroll is an absolutely invaluable publicity picture. And that is, in one of the pictures of Rabbi Yashiv learning, they show him looking, not at an English Art Scroll, that he didn't, that much they didn't do, but he was looking at a Hebrew Art Scroll. So what's the pshat? Well, what is the Hebrew Art Scroll going to tell him? You know, what the word tiyufta means? I mean, what is he looking? No, but the notes, you know, have Mar Makamos. The notes have things. So what's the pshat? Here you have Rabbi Yashiv. I can't tell you how many times he learned shas. Was it 500 times? What is it, 1,000 times? I don't know, but it's up there quite a lot. And yet, what's the pshat? Maybe some Avreich, maybe some younger man came up with some svara. It could happen that, you know, he didn't think of before, some little ha'ara that might be good. And that's the fact, Lo Mid Mikol Adam. Here you have a Zaken and a Gadol Hador who is already, I don't know if he was 100 or approaching 100 then. And, you know, he's looking and seeing what some young guy might have come up with. It's the Gemara. The Gemara says like this. Tyrus compared to water, and there are a lot of reasons, but it compares it to fish. It says, fish are surrounded by water. And yet when it rains, and there are drops of water hitting the water, they rush up to get the water. Now, the reason is, not because they think it's water, the reason is because they think it's something they can eat. But whatever it is, visually, it's an amazing image. Your whole life is water. And when there's another drop, you want to get more water. He says, the Medrash says, that is the derech of a Talmud Chacham. Totally surrounded with Torah. But if there's one new little shtickle of Torah that maybe they didn't see, what are the chances? They're going to search it out. So you see, and but that comes from another. That does come from humility. That's why, with certain gedolim, whenever the chasn would be interrupted, the gadol would say, no, you have to finish. I want to hear your kasha, and I want to hear your thing. That's a real big problem for the chasn who didn't prepare. Sometimes the chasn is simech, he's not going to have to finish. He doesn't prepare. So you're in big trouble, but... That's what he's saying. I don't know everything. There's something I can learn. So these are two inyanim of anava, right? One is the anava of hatznei aleches, of being modest and not showing off your knowledge. And the other is the anava of saying, I am still willing to learn from people who are, much less than this Talmud Chacham is, but still. And Chazal themselves said that. That's what Chazal meant when they said, Mitalmid, Harbe, Lamariti Mirabaisai, I've learned much from my Rebbein, more from my Chaverim, and most from my Talmid. Yeah.
I heard that a person should be eager to learn Torah the way that people in Wall Street make money. And people in Wall Street, what happens to people in Wall Street?
How do I? Yeah.
People in Wall Street, they wait for the news, and it's like a drop of news coming in, and they all like fish go to it.
That's
the same way Rabbi Yashu was waiting for the...
That's right. Yeah, how have I? It's like Rav Yochanan said, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, B'shas mi sasai, his Talmidim asked him for some parting words of Musar. Yihi ratzayim, that you should have as much Myra Shemayim as you have Myra Basar Vadam. So they said, how have I? I mean, that's it? And they said, how have I, that you should fear Hashem as much as you're afraid of people. A person is about to steal, and they tell them, somebody's watching, they're not going to steal. The Abishter is watching, it's only Hashem. Okay, yeah. that I can do, yes?
Also, when it says that in English it says that some people, some pretend to be rich but have nothing, others are poor and have great wealth.
Yes.
Like Warren Buffett, he acts like he's a posher person.
That's right, Warren Buffett, yeah.
And it feels like in the little meaning of the pasuk, it fits also.
Yeah. No, again, you have to understand, in Mishlei, we have a simple pshat, and then we have a more symbolic pshat. So certainly, there is a simple pshat, and we're not meaning to replace it, but the Gra often likes to interpret these psukim to refer to the qualities of Talmud Torah. Okay, let's do one more pasuk. And here we have an interesting machlokes Rashi in the Gra, I guess. Kaifer nefesh ish oshro, the rush, leishama ga'ara. Okay, the word kofer nefesh. Kofer nefesh is a word that actually appears in the Torah when it talks about the machzis ha-shekel, when you give the half shekel. It is a kofer nefesh. It is an atonement or a redemption for your soul. In other words, it's a kapara for the chedo egel and the like. So the pasuk is saying that sometimes Hashem allows a person's wealth to be an atonement for his neshama, and it refers to the idea, as Mishlei said earlier, tzedakah tasel mimavis. Sometimes a person has averos, and because of those averos, they're chayav misa, they deserve to die. But Hashem will accept a monetary atonement as a way of saving his life, right? So a person should recognize, in fact, this is why a person should, number one, give, this has two implications. Number one, a person should give tzedakah, because the tzedakah that you give could be a kofer for your nefesh, an atonement. And number two, even if you don't give tzedakah, even if chas v'shalom you have financial setbacks, property gets destroyed, property gets lost, a person should say, Baruch Hashem, this is a kapara. I accept it. This is a kapara for my averus. So a person should know that sometimes you're given wealth as a kapara, to be used as a kapara for your averus, and it might actually save your life in Olam Hazeh, And it also enables you to go to Olam Haba because you've given all of that staka. That staka tatsal mimavis. Now that's the first part of the pasuk, that the wealth of a person can be a kofer nefesh, a redemption and a ransom for his soul. But then we have the second part of the pasuk. This is where you have an interesting machloket, Rashi and the Gra. Rush, a poor person, lo shama ga'ara, does not hear rebuke. Now what is that referring to? So let me first tell you what Rashi says, then I'll tell you what the Gra says. Rashi learns that this is a condition on the first part. When will your charity be a kofer nefesh? Only if you don't embarrass or shame the poor person that is getting that tzedakah. Meaning, if you give your tzedakah in a high-handed way, a denigrating way, a humiliating way, the tzedakah will not have the impact of being a kofer, a redemption for your soul. Right? So that's how we learn it. This is Rashi. When do I say, kofer nefesh ish ashro, when do I say your wealth will be a ransom for your soul if you give tzedakah? Only if you give tzedakah in such a way that the rush, the needy person who receives it, does not hear ga'ara, rebuke. Now, the question on Rashi is the following. The question on Rashi is that the word ga'ara normally means musr. Now, according to Rashi, the pasuk is simply saying, don't shame the poor person. The implication of musar is not so clear, unless maybe part of how you shame a poor person is you say, why don't you get a job, right? I mean, this is actually the type of, in other words, this might be it. If you're going to give tzedakah and give the poor guy a hard time, why isn't he working? So in a way, you forfeited the zechus of that tzedakah. But that's how Rashi learns. Now, the Gra learns the following. The Gra learns that Rosh Lashama Ga'ara means the following. He says that if a person is wealthy in this world, the tzedakah that he gives will be a kofer nefesh that will keep him out of Gehenna. Okay, that tzedakah tassel mimavet refers to also Gehenna. But he will still have to pass by the entrance of Gehenna, meaning to say, even though he won't have to go to Gehenna, but he will hear the suffering. In other words, part of his punishment will be to hear the suffering that is going on in Gehenna. But the person that is an ani in Olam Hazeh, that didn't even have the pleasure of material wealth, the anios itself is such a kapara that he won't even hear. Lo shama, right? Lo shama gaira. He will not hear the rebuke of the Rishon again. I mean, he won't even be near Gehenna. So it's making a point, the following. The rich man has the kapara of tzedakah. The ani has even a greater kapara, the kapara of anios. And the nafkamina is, the rich man passes by Gehenna, but doesn't go in, but he's affected at some level. The ani doesn't even hear what's going on, right? So in other words, it's making a point in some ways that the ani should not be despondent. The ani should not feel abandoned by Hashem, because the anias itself is the greatest of kaparas.
You want to? So you pray, the person who has to report, you should also pray. Sounds funny.
Well, there actually is, let me show you, there's actually a pasuk in the end of Mishlei. Let's see if I can find it. I think it's Perek Lamed. Perek Lamed, pasuk Ches. Shavu devar kazav harchek mimeni. Distance from me, wasteful things and lies. Reish v'yasher al titengli. do not give me poverty and do not give me wealth. Hatrifeni lechem chuki, give me what I need in life. So it actually was a prayer not to be too wealthy, not to be too poor. Yeah. Okay. We'll stop here. Yeah.
Is there a distinction between, like, is probably only talking about, like, physical poverty, or is it, like, constant spiritual poverty, or, like, or is it always doctor only the physical?
Well, again, in the pasuk before, about wealth and poverty, we were referring to spiritual, right? That's how the Vilna Gaon learned it.
So
this pasuk he's learning is going on physical, because this is referring to tzedakah. Now, you could interpret it differently, although I don't see anyone interpreting this way, that if wealth means a wealth of Torah, so what it's saying is this, and this is a totally different interpretation. Once again, the wealth that a person amasses in Torah will be an atonement for his soul, but the rush, the poor person, the one who is bereft of Torah, will never be able to hear the musr that will improve his soul. In other words, it's not a positive, instead of saying, Lo Shomagara, he's not going to go through Gehenna. You could learn it the other way. Without Torah, he will not be responsive to the words of Musr that could give him a kapara. In other words, it's making a negative statement, and that would correspond to Pirkei Avos, Lo Am Haaretz Chesed. And Am Haaretz bereft of Torah cannot be pious. So you see, that's mamash, a 180-degree opposite interpretation, but that would be possible, although the Gra does not say it. Yeah, did you want to say one?
So that's the ideal for a person not to be rich, not to be poor. That's the ideal to be in the.
Well, it's the ideal because it has fewer nisyonos, right? The rich person has the nisaya, number one, of fulfilling his duties of tzedakah. He has to be much more conscientious because he has more resources. And number two, not to get overly involved in business. The poor person has the nisaya of not having the time or the yishuv hadas, the concentration. So when you're in the middle, you're kind of able to do it. I think I told you this again. I have a lot of Reb Chaim stories tonight for some reason. I'll just end with this maisa about a man in Brisk. I think I mentioned before, but pardon me for repeating it. There was a man in Brisk who was very, very wealthy, at least by Polish standards, maybe. That wasn't so great. And he was a tremendous Baal Tzedakah. He did everything right. He served Hashem. He was shomer mitzvahs. He was gevei itim l'tayra. He took care of people. He was makabel them b'sever panim yafos, and he became reduced to abject poverty, and he had to live in the street. He didn't even have a roof over his head. So the Briskarov, as a young boy, went to his father and said, "I don't understand. Here, I understand the usher doesn't give tzedakah. Hashem takes it away. The person doesn't do the mitzvahs when he has the resources. Hashem takes it away. Here you have a person who was a tzaddik in tzedakah." He did everything in such a beautiful way. Why should this happen to him? So Rav Chaim said, that sometimes people go to school for many years to become a doctor, and they learn how to be a doctor, they pick up a skill, but then they have to change their profession, and they have to go to school for many years the other way, to be a lawyer. I myself, when I taught in law school, I had doctors who were law students. Why would a doctor want to be a lawyer? Part of it is because they were sued as doctors for malpractice. Now they want to get back and do it the other way. but being a man, LMI, the pshat is you go to school for many years till you master one profession, but when you need to have another profession, you have to go to school for years for that. So Rav Chaim said, life is like a school. And there are two main courses of study that you have in life. One is how to be an Eved Hashem in Anias, and how to be an Eved Hashem in Ashiras. Most people, if they can do it at all, they can only master one field. Most people can only be a doctor or a lawyer. They can't be both. But if somebody is very special and very great, they can become a master. They could be Shailit in both areas. So here was a Yochid who totally mastered how to serve Hashem as an usher. So Hashem says, okay, you mastered that. I'm giving you a new course, how to serve Hashem as an ani. And for Karet, it was Hashem's confidence in this person that he was such a tzaddik, that the same way he was Eved Hashem, b'ashiris, he will be oved Hashem b'anias. Now, sometimes people are cynical. They say, well, if Hashem is going to give him both challenges, why doesn't he reverse it? Why doesn't he give him, why doesn't he give him the anias first and then the ashiris? So at least there's an externally a happier ending. Right, that way he has both challenges. But I think that this is part of Hashem's love for him, because to be an ani after the ashiris is much harder than to be an ani l'chatchila. And since l'fum tzara agra, since the reward in Eilam Haba is based on the pain and the suffering, so Hashem gives him a configuration that is more painful, knowing that he will be matzliach in that as well. And then he will get much more schar for being the ani after the asher than he would get for being the asher after the ani. Shav Chaim said, this is it. Most people, Hashem may leave them as ashirim, because halvai, they'll be zoiche to serve Hashem be ashiris. But a person who could also do the other thing, Hashem says, get a double degree. I'll give you a degree in that as well. That's what Rav Chaim said. Okay, have a good day. Good luck and good weekend.